Five centuries ago, in taverns and public houses across Europe, the masses would gather for discussion and debate over the latest ideas sweeping the land. From one such meeting place, a small Cambridge inn called the White Horse, the Reformation came to the English-speaking world. Carrying on the tradition, welcome to the White Horse Inn.
Hello and welcome to another broadcast of the White Horse Inn. This is part two of a two-part series on how to find a church. Should I stay or should I go now is the name of this series. And we're taking a look at some very practical questions. What is a true church in the first place? What does it mean that the word is rightly preached and the sacraments are rightly administered? How bad does it have to get before I leave? Should I try to change things? If I leave, how should I do it? How do I understand the bewildering denominational options? This is the line of questioning that we've picked up because we get a lot of letters from those of you out there who are trying to find a church. Maybe you're moving to a new town, or maybe you have just heard this stuff for the first time and you're saying, I can't go through this every Sunday. My wife and I get angry every time we go to church, and I don't want to do that every week. That's what we're addressing in what we hope are practical issues for these two programs. And we're going to get to our questions in just a moment. But before we do that, our usual hosts, the Reverend Ken Jones is pastor of Greater Union Baptist Church in Compton, California. Dr. Rod Rosenblatt is a Lutheran minister and teaches theology at Concordia University in Irvine. Dr. Kim Riddlebarger is pastor of Christ Reformed Church in Anaheim, California, and I'm Mike Horton. I teach at Westminster Seminary in California. Guys, when we talk about the issue of finding a church, even behind that sometimes leaving a church, how do we understand the bewildering denominational options? When you open up the Yellow Pages, one of the greatest scandals to Christianity is CHURCH in the Yellow Pages.
You know, years ago, somebody did a graphic. We should ask some artist who's a friend of the White Horse Inn to do this again as a tree so that you could see where a particular group traces its way back. It's going to be to Eastern Orthodoxy, almost by itself, to Rome, and then when you split off the Protestant branches, you're going to be able to trace your way to Calvin or to Luther or to Wesley.
Let's try to do that very briefly for the folks. First of all, from the 11th century, you have the East-West Schism. Mm-hmm. So you have the Eastern Orthodox churches. When you hear about the Orthodox churches, put in front of that any adjective, Greek, Russian. Serbian, Russian, whatever. Those are the Eastern churches. The Western churches, basically the Roman Catholic churches and the Protestant churches.
Yes.
And so since the Reformation, the Western Church is divided between Protestants and Roman Catholics. And then the Protestant churches are divided after the Reformation, predominantly, at least in the 16th century, by Lutheran, Reformed, and Anabaptist.
Yes.
Out of those three traditions grow most of the denominations that we have today. In the 17th century, in the English-speaking world, you had a debate over ecclesiology. That is, how should the church be run? Should it be episcopal, that is, with bishops running the show?
No.
should it be...
Thou speakest truly.
Yes. Should it be Presbyterian, with presbyteries and broader assemblies involved, and not just local churches? Or should it be Congregationalist, and just have local churches as autonomous churches? That's why we have Episcopalians, Presbyterians, and Congregationalists. And out of those churches, we have... So there have been a lot of reasons for division. There are also national churches. There are continental Reformed churches. And there are Scottish and British Presbyterian churches. In the same family, the Reformed family. But... Having a little bit of a different character.
Let me throw in there, for the sake of continuity and clarity, on Baptist roots, because there are two areas that you mentioned that Baptist roots can be traced to. One is Arminian Baptists can be traced to the Anabaptist root coming out of the Reformation. But then the Calvinistic Baptists would go back to 17th century English congregationalism. And I think that's a distinction that needs to be made, because sometimes Baptists are unfairly characterized as coming strictly from the Anabaptist root.
Yeah. I think isn't it the closest, if you want to say the 16th century Anabaptist, and immediately find a representative in our century, the first would be Pentecostal, I think.
Yeah.
And the Mennonites.
Yeah. Yeah. Could I mention a book?
Sure.
If a person is looking to do this theologically, Concordia puts out a book called, oddly enough, Religious Bodies of America.
They used to put out a book called Religious Bodies of America. Yeah.
Just went out of print.
The uniqueness of this
book. And they had pictures?
You were thinking along the same lines as I. The uniqueness of this book is that it analyzes a group doctrinally. It isn't just historical. So that if you go to looking for a particular group, within reason, it's not every group, but you'll find locus by locus what they hold doctrinally.
And that was doctrinally, not anatomically.
That's right. That's right. Religious Bodies of America. The author is F.E. Mayer.
Let's try to run through in a sort of brief way, and people can't, obviously, we can't do anything significant here, but just to give people a broad picture of the landscape out there in the Yellow Pages. Of the Lutheran bodies, the main line is the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America, which is the result of a bunch of mergers.
Mm-hmm.
Rod, what's the character of the ELCA from your point of view?
It would be parallel to your Presbyterian Church USA. It is a result of a union between the former Lutheran Church in America and the former American Lutheran Church. Most of our synods began as language groupings in the beginnings in America because they couldn't communicate with one another. Then it got so that it really was theological. For somebody like me who moved over from what is now the ELCA to the Missouri Synod, that would be the more liberal theologically of our groups in America, albeit still the largest.
Okay, now there are other Lutheran bodies. There's the Wisconsin Synod, the Evangelical Lutheran Synod. There are other bodies, but you would say the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America is basically the main line.
Yes.
And the LCMS, Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, is basically the conservative
alternative. Yes, that would be a fair shaping of it.
Okay. For us on the Reformed, first of all, we have the Continental Reformed, and then we have the Scoto-American Reformed. And the English
reform,
or the Anglican
reform. Reform.
So, same thing with you, Rod. You're saying the different nationalities. That's another thing that brings different denominations to the table. Don't assume, just as you can't assume that everything that has your name on the marquee is saying what you think it should, don't assume that things that don't have the same name on the marquee are not saying what you're saying.
Right.
Because a lot of this is national. The Church of England versus the Church of Scotland, Church of Scotland versus the Reformed Church of the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. You have different communities here, the German Reformed Church, the Hungarian Reformed Church. They bring distinctive approaches and distinctive languages and therefore distinctive church bodies, but not distinctive confessions.
And that's why when they go through the process of Americanization, they all become community churches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an important point. So the Reformed Church in America would be the main line, and the Christian Reformed Church and the United Reformed Churches would be more conservative.
More conservative bodies, and there's a whole spectrum there, of course.
The Presbyterian Church in the USA is the mainline Presbyterian Church, while the PCA, Presbyterian Church in America, OPC, Orthodox Presbyterian Church, and a couple of other smaller bodies are the conservative varieties.
Yes.
The Protestant Episcopal Church is the mainline Episcopal Church, and the Reformed Episcopal Church is the conservative version of that. You could even say the United Church of Christ is the mainline body of a bunch of merged denominations, whereas the conservative Congregationalist churches and the Reformed Church in the U.S., which refused to go into that merger with the Evangelical and Reformed churches, which were sort of a Lutheran-Reformed mixture, are the conservative variety.
We're clear.
Woo, we've already confused everybody out there.
You haven't even gotten to the
Baptists.
And you think it's wild so far.
That's what's scary. We haven't gotten to the Baptists yet.
No, actually, we can simplify that one.
All right. How do you simplify it for us?
Well, first, you can look at the Baptist church along ethnic lines. National Baptists is primarily African-American. National Baptist, Progressive. There's about two major ethnic, you know, African-American Baptist denominations. Now, the interesting thing there is many of them carry the name Missionary Baptist, but that's not their conventional association. Southern Baptist would be the largest white Baptist, and there would be a crossover. There would be churches that would be dually aligned. And then among the, now with Calvin, with Calvinism or Reform leanings, you can find some in either group, Southern Baptists and in National Baptists. However, there is the Reform Baptists, which are confessional. Now, the confessional Reform Baptists adhere to the 1680 or subscribe to the 1689 London Baptist Confession of Faith. And then from there, you would have the independents.
We're talking about how to find a church, and we are now getting to our questions, to the first question.
I basically have two questions. Number one, it sounds to me that you're really choosing a pastor rather than a church, and if you could comment on that. And secondly, if I'm going to a new church, what do you think would be the minimal requirement to become a member? What kind of membership requirement should I expect to join a new church?
Good. Good question.
That is a real good question, and you could easily put that take on it that we're asking people to choose a church based upon the pastor. But unfortunately, you can't go by denominational labels anymore, and you really are forced to pick an individual who is faithful to the biblical text. Mm-hmm. So it isn't, you're not picking the pastor because you like him and you're going to go to the church because you think he's a good guy and friendly and all of that. You're going to this particular church because that particular pastor preaches Christ from the scriptures.
And aren't you going because it has a confession and he says that he fought?
That's for us. Yeah. And even though we don't exercise that, if the layman doesn't exercise that, in principle, he would have the right to say to a pastor in Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, but what you're doing Sundays and through the week doesn't match what our Book of Concord says. Mm. And they would have a right to do that.
Mm. You bring up an important issue with the confession. That's one of the things that you discover as you are awakened in an old tradition. Confession for the first time. So now that is a good guide in terms of looking for a church. What is the confession of that particular church?
Mm-hmm. But the question gets to the point that not all pastors are faithful to their confessions and preach the way they ought. And you're not picking the pastors as a personality. You're picking the pastor who's faithful to what he's charged to do.
Right.
Don't you think there are basically five questions you can ask? Here, I've written these down. Tell me what you think.
Yeah, those were the 5 hours I was thinking of.
Yeah, okay, we can go on then. Does your church, number one, does your church view... These are the questions you can ask the person on the phone. Does your church view Scripture as God's self-revelation? Two, what's the goal of the preaching? What's the general diet? What am I likely to hear? And if they can't answer that, by the way, even if it's the church secretary, then you've got a pretty good answer. Three, would your church emphasize human sinfulness and justification by grace alone, through faith alone, because of Christ alone? That gets pretty
clear. To the point.
Four, what's your confessional statement, and is it a significant guide?
Right. Mm. Right.
If they don't, if that's not clear, then they certainly don't subscribe it in any serious way. Five, what's the driving force in your church's style of worship? You get a clear answer to that. Everybody could answer. I know people who would answer in a positive way to all four. Then they get to number five and say, oh, well, outreach. You know, perfectly good things, but not the driving force.
Right.
So those are, I think, questions people could ask.
Good questions. As far as membership, a church should require some catechesis, and there should be some explanation of what is expected and what you can expect from the church. And that ought to involve some kind of membership classes or things like, so that there are very clear expectations. If you join this congregation, this is what is expected of you. This is the faith to which you must hold. And then you can expect this from us.
And would they discipline you if you had Lutheran or Baptist leanings?
Well, I wanted to comment on what you just said, Kim. When you say... a brief catechesis. What confessional churches mean by that is not two happy Saturday mornings with coffee.
Right, yeah. Right.
And sometimes this is shocking to an American. But if you look back to the early church, catechesis was a very high... There were catechists, and it was a very high calling to teach the doctrine to those looking into the Christian faith.
Took a long time,
Took a long time. And those of the Reformation are probably the strongest adherents of this is not two happy Saturday mornings.
Yeah, that's something that, as a matter of fact, a person from a Reformed church, Christian Reformed church, brought to my attention that... in the Bible, what we see is people received into the church immediately. Unfortunately, we're not in those days, and we must take the time to make clear what the church teaches, because this is the message and the confession that you are taking a stand on. Yep.
I'd like to give you a hypothetical question that I'm moving to an area where my church choices will be very limited. I will have a choice between a liberal, Reformed, or Lutheran church that has forsaken its confessions and is no longer practicing law and gospel and administers the sacraments infrequently, or an independent Bible church with legalistic and Pentecostal leanings, or a liturgical Catholic church. Which would you feel most comfortable with?
You must be moving to Bakersfield.
Be ready to commute.
Yeah, we have towns in mind that you're referring to.
Oh, I have family in towns like that. That is a really good and very, very difficult question. You have to go where you hear the gospel.
Exactly.
But remember, you're not joining a local church. If you're talking about, at least on the Presbyterian and Reformed side here, you guys might disagree. Mm-hmm. You might have a completely different answer for this. But we would say, covenantally, you are participating in a visible church that is not just on Fifth and Main.
Right, that is has an organic connection to other churches.
That's right. And if you have a church, like the Roman Catholic Church, that officially anathematizes the gospel, then even if you go to Mass where you could hear more of the gospel in the liturgy there than you could hear at many of the evangelical churches, you're still joining and giving your children to an institution that denies the gospel.
The other thing you have to factor into that whole question would be, do any of these historic Protestant churches, even if they're liberal, still have the historic liturgies?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to go to a local Episcopal church where you had the Book of Common Prayer, even the modern editions, you'd still get gospel on that, even if the preacher didn't believe anything.
That's
Don't
right.
send them to the Bible church, though, or they'll become atheists.
Yeah, in the long run.
If it's a legalistic Bible church.
The children will end up in unbelief, and the odds are very high on that. I think, Kim, you've raised a very good point. I've sometimes said to people, bring a cassette with a good law gospel Lutheran sermon on it, but just go where the liturgy is and where he sticks to the text of the liturgy. It will proclaim the gospel to you well and accurately. Then when he gets up into the pulpit, non-theist that he might be, you'll turn your Walkman on and hear something of value. Then when he descends from the pulpit, you turn your Walkman off, and if he sticks to the script of the liturgy the way he should in the Lord's Supper, then the gospel will be delivered to you there.
It is clearly a lesser of evil's choice in that case.
Yeah.
My question is this. What place do ministries have in today's Christian world, and how should they relate to the church?
Yeah, what exactly do you mean by ministries? I think we would all say that there is only one ministry, the ministry of word and sacrament, and the ministry of service, which is diaconal, and both are ministries of the church.
I would say such things as R.C. Sproul and his ministries.
Or this radio program. Yeah, we wouldn't call these ministries.
No.
Yeah, that raises the whole question of parachurch organizations. And again, there are certain things that parachurch organizations like, what's the World Hunger?
World Vision.
World Vision.
Yeah.
Like Wycliffe Bible Translators that can do things that individual churches or even individual denominations can't do. But they're the exception rather than the rule. The local church's biblical mandate is to preach Christ, administer the sacraments, exercise discipline, and whatever the local consistory deems fitting and proper to the marks of the church, should be things that are done in the church.
In many cases, through the centuries, the existence of parachurch ministries is really a condemnation of the church that is not doing what it ought to have done. Mm-hmm. So it produces these things. Even if you have a parachurch ministry that in its official literature and in its acting says, we send people to the local congregations, you still have the development, inevitably, of what in our background was called an ecclesia in ecclesiam, a church within the church. Mm-hmm. And the genuine church is the one that meets in small groups, so what in our Scandinavian Lutheran pietism was called conventicles. Though these people were the leaders in their parish and at the cathedral every Sunday morning, parachurch ministries have that built into them.
Yeah, and we have to. This gives us a good chance to say, this isn't one of those.
Yeah. That
we're a bunch of guys.
It's a think tank
who get on the radio and talk about Reformation theology. This is not designed to channel people into any particular business. We're just a bunch of guys talking on the radio. Don't take this as an alternative to going to church.
Right.
And I think because the parachurch really gained prominence as a result of revivalism, but I think it presents a very real challenge to those of us who participate with any parachurch organization, that we recognize we're not a church, and therefore we should not attempt to pastor people as if we were, because we can make the work of the local pastor very difficult by trying to pontificate and act as if we have some kind of authority when in actuality we don't.
And nothing would make us any happier than to hear that you have joined a church
exactly.
as a result of thinking through things you've heard on the White Horse Inn.
Right. That's what excites us.
Right.
And next week, we'll be talking a bit about heaven and hell. So I hope you'll join us. This is Mike Horton for the White Horse Inn. We'll see you next week.
The White Horse Inn is a listener-supported broadcast. For more information about supporting our efforts, give us a call at 1-800-890-7556. That's 1-800-890-7556. You can also visit us online at whitehorseinn.org. That's whitehorseinn.org.